Greetings, fellow a-holes, and welcome to another fine, fine edition of Objection, with an exclamation point, of course, brought to you by DBD Verdict. I'm Judge Dan Mancini. Joining me, as always, is Judge David Johnson.
Hello.
And we're at the tail end, in the home stretch, of a 20-film countdown of the top 20 action movies despised by Prius owners.
Yes, indeed. As broad a generalization as that may be.
Right, right. We're just stereotyping Prius owners, as we would, you know, be want to do. You want to hit them up with, you know, qualifies as a movie that a Prius owner.
That's right. The little, so what we've been using is, again, we kind of go with more art than science, so you kind of know it when you see it, but it's just that kind of action movie that seems to be a lost art, just starring kind of proactive heroes that really take the fight to an enemy that's typically not an enemy from a made-up Middle Eastern country and or Russia. Typically not a lot of Eastern European villains who are just kind of cookie cutter. So the kind of action movies where you've got heroes that aren't afraid to do the dirty work, you know, and they, you know, and so instead of like getting out of the way just in time as a bad guy jams his pitchfork into the circuit board and electrocutes himself, you know, he disarms the bad guy, takes the pitchfork and jams it into his face. So,
right.
So just that kind of alpha hardcore, no apologies, not really nuanced, just a red meat sirloin tip worth a movie.
Right, the kind of movie we like, Prius owners do not.
Yes. Then perhaps you are a Prius owner, you do love those movies. So congratulations on your excellent movie taste and, you know, your fantastic gas mileage, I guess, right?
Right, exactly. Although you may want to consider a muscle car if you like these kind of movies, especially the two that we're going to be talking about today. And so, like I say, we're in the home stretch here, and we are, you know, things are timing out pretty good because we're going to be hitting, I think, numbers, you know, the end of this list will sort of cap off 2010.
Yes.
For us.
So it'll be.
And, which will be perfect timing because I think at the beginning of 2011, Detective Harrigan will be coming back from vacation.
Yes. Speaking of which, you know, our little podcast here inspired by Predator 2. I got sucked into watching Predator 2 again. It was on TV. It was on the Encore High Def channel. It was right at the sweet spot where Harrigan, you know, the Predator just assaulted the train. So
nice.
Right there when, you know, we got Gary Busey and we got the slaughterhouse and then just the extended one-on-one scene. So I couldn't turn away again.
Yeah, it's magnificent. I almost watched it last night. I was eyeing it on the shelf. And ultimately, actually chose to watch Sudden Death instead. But, Predators is...
Hey, you win either way.
Predator 2 is awesome. Yeah. Yeah, two, you know, gutsy red meat movies, to be sure.
Absolutely.
So before we jump into the two movies we'll talk about tonight, which are numbers 4 and 3 on the list... So we are really in the home stretch. Figured we'd run down the 20 before, or you know what we've done so far, because I actually, you know, we've done enough show prep tonight that we actually have the list in front of us and no technical issues. So, you know, we're sort of more prepared than normal.
Mm-hmm.
So number 20 was Band of Brothers. 19 was Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom.
That's right.
18 was the Lord of the Rings trilogy. A nice threefer. 17 was Commando. 16 was Black Dynamite. 15 was True Lies. 14 was License to Kill. 13, Apocalypto. 12, Tombstone, which is just awesome.
Yes, of course.
11, The Expendables, another awesome movie, which I watched again this week. It seems like I'm watching it weekly. These days. 10 was Team America. 9, The Incredibles. 8, Taken. Awesomeness. be sure. 7, Master and Commander. 6 was another, well, I guess a threefer, actually.
Right.
It was Rambo 2, 3, and the latest Rambo movie.
Yeah.
Which I guess is just Rambo.
Right.
You know, and one thing we forgot to mention in that in last week's episode was the Rambo movies have the most inexplicable titles.
Yeah, they do. You're correct.
Any series ever.
They make it really hard to market themselves.
Right. Rambo First Blood 2, Rambo 3, and then somehow Rambo. So I don't get it, but whatever. The movies are still awesome. And then number 5, as we crack the top 5, was Demolition Man, which, as we said, is just a full frontal assault.
Yeah, it was a real Sly Stallone right in the guts of this countdown. So yeah, I mean, you got to have him represent, you know.
Yeah, yeah, and I think we've done our due diligence there. So this week, you know, we actually talked about last week, as we prepped for this show, that we might have to like throw some Julia Roberts movies or something in here in the midst of the two movies that we're going to tackle today, because these are so testosterone fueled that I have a mustache now.
Yeah, true. Yeah, I got a little 5 o'clock shadow.
Right. When we started recording, I did not have a mustache, and I do right now.
I mean, they are so manly. I think, you know, the NFL is going to send over a doctor to do some mandatory blood work on me, you know, because there's a good chance there's some HGH involved.
Exactly. And the first movie is one that we've talked about before, number 4 on our list, but it's a movie that we just couldn't do a top 20 list of action movies hated by Prius enthusiasts without this being on it. I mean, whether we've talked about it or not, wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, for sure.
And it has to be in the top 5, and that is and we talked about last week, we talked about the fact that and justified the fact that Die Hard was not on this list.
That's true. I mean we understand it. We understand you know, without Die Hard, there really is no abuse of the old white man cabal. You know, I mean, really, Die Hard popularized the old white man cabal. You know, the Eastern European with a vague national descent. You know, I mean, you know, they ran with it. You know, and really, it wasn't except the second movie where you had a Colombian drug dealer, which was nice and, you know, that was timely, I suppose. You know, a little Colombian drug dealing scumbag, but the other two movies, you're a straight-up old white man cabal puppeteering, so.
Yeah, and Die Hard 2 definitely has at least a sort of subset of the old white man cabal with, you know, this military.
That's right. Yeah, actually, it could probably be argued that it's worse because you've got military guys who are the bad guys, so.
Right, right.
I think we've defended Die Hard 2, but that's pretty.
Yeah, yeah. Pretty, so.
Especially with Fred Thompson in there. You know, he didn't get a script review on that, you know?
Right, right. So Die Hard did not make the list, but we do have.
Yeah, we can't have John right McTiernan now, not right. be part of this.
Exactly. So here's our John McTiernan movie, and it is The 13th Warrior.
Yes. 1999. Which is a movie we have talked about in the past.
Yeah. But, you know, you can't talk about it enough.
Right. That's true. A severely underrated action movie.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely underrated. I mean, you never really even hear it talked about, and it's a great one. So, I mean, what are your thoughts on it in terms of?
Yeah, well, it's funny you mentioned how you've been watching The Expendables pretty regularly. You know, it's been on a regular rotation for you because when this movie came out on DVD, and it was the first movie I ever purchased on DVD. It was
Excellent.
My very first DVD purchase. I mean, I bought it to go along with my like $300 Sony DVD player. You know, whatever that Sony DVD player was, it was. Very expensive, but
yeah, you know, it was like a small car.
Oh yeah, it was an expensive purchase. I had to write it off of my tax, you know, my taxes. But that was the first movie, and then, you know, me and my best friend, we just watched that every night, probably for 2 weeks straight. Every night, watched that movie, and we were so overwhelmed by the manliness and awesomeness and machismo. Yeah. How do I pronounce that? Machismo. Am I right on that pronunciation?
Yeah, I think so.
That we ordered a pair of Viking swords that we could take out in the woods and hack at branches with. We would later find out that those Viking swords aren't really built to be used on branches, the hilts shattered pretty quickly. But man, that it really touched a primal nerve. So just really like it. Obviously, it's based on a Michael Crichton book, which is based on Beowulf. Michael Crichton, yeah. Eaters of the Dead is the book he did, and he kind of set it up as like the scholarly thing. It's like a scholarly manuscript, even though it's very much a Beowulf homage, and I guess that'll be the nice thing to say about it. But involves 12 Vikings, and the 13th warrior is Antonio Banderas, cast as an Arab butt kicker, and he teams up with these just like it's pretty much like I don't know the offensive line of the Steelers in the 70s, just these. Yeah. Gigantic dudes, these gigantic Viking dudes, and they proceed just to dominate, take out their aggression and their swordcraft on a pretty interesting villain, I'll have to say. I kind of like the villain in this. It's this weird tribe of, wolf people, and regular guys that dress up as wolves, douchebags to a person, of course.
Yes,
and they still kind of shrouded in mystery. I mean, there's no women part of the tribe. They seem to just kind of worship some hot, like this hot queen, this hot, like, witch queen.
Right.
But just great, just some stirring action moments. McTiernan really mixes it up nicely. One of the manliest movies ever made. I always say how, like, the women's roles are, like, crazy witch, hot queen, submissive maidservant,
Right.
So, smoking warrior princess pretty much. So it's really got everything,
Yeah.
And with only one name to it, you recognize some of those guys. I've seen some of those Viking guys pop up here and there, notably, Bolvi, who plays, he's like the leader of the Vikings. He shows up as a villain in Howie Long's underappreciated Firestorm. So
yeah,
that's pretty much it. But yeah, that's for me. It's just a great time and patiently awaiting that on Blu-ray.
Yeah, that would be nice. Yeah, I didn't even know going into it that, I saw it on DVD the first time. I didn't see it in the theater, that it had anything to do with Beowulf. And so, as much as we sort of give nuance a backhand, this movie has... it's action packed, but there is some nuance in there in the way that it kind of plays with history and plays with Beowulf, and it does the sort of truth behind the myth thing, so that this tribe of wolf guys, whatever they are, you can imagine them the way that they kind of covertly their sort of style of guerrilla warfare, I guess. It's easy to imagine them becoming Grendel in the myth, as the myth of Beowulf sort of builds into this poem, right? So, it's kind of interesting on that level. And then Banderas plays a guy, and I'm sure I'm mispronouncing his name, but because I'm looking at IMDb right now, but it's Ahmed Ibn Fadlan.
Yes, Ahmed Ibn Fadlan, Ibn right. something, something, right, right.
Who is a real guy.
Nice. He's a little more clever than just, not just like this, protruding brow.
Right.
He's a
real guy who really did go to Europe. Probably did not meet the historical person, if there was such a person.
13th War isn't just Cape Man.
It's a kind of clever melding of some historical source materials and mythology. And, it's a lot of fun, too.
Yeah. Yes. It's like I said, it's not just entertainment for those with the protruding brows. I mean, there's some cool little tweaks they have here,
And it will pay off. I mean, if you're sad and lonely enough to be familiar with Beowulf, and tweed wearing enough to be familiar with Beowulf, then there's nice little touches here and there that kind of pay off and make the movie interesting.
Definitely. So.
As we've discussed, it has the most badass death sequence for a hero.
Oh, absolutely.
Arguably in the history.
Really? I mean, is there anything I can't think. I mean, the only one that might approach his death sequence is Boromir in Fellowship of the Ring,
Yeah.
He goes down like a total stud, even though he's kind of just a don't know. The fact that he's kind of taken out from a distance diminishes it a little bit, but you know, but he takes out so many orcs. But this guy just he goes out on his own terms, you know.
Yeah.
Just he's got his giant dog next to him and just sits on a throne with his sword right after just wasting their top general. So,
right. And I mean that when you say something like arguably the greatest hero death sequence ever, it sounds like, you know, just typical internet
hyperbole.
But, you know, I'm not joking around. It seriously. Like, it's not exaggeration or hyperbole.
That's right. It is
potentially the greatest hero death ever on film.
Absolutely. Check it out if you do not, even though we spoiled that out of it. Yeah, check it out. I mean, and, you know, props to Banderas. I mean, he's the star, obviously, but he's definitely not the biggest stud in this movie. You know,
no.
Like all those guys are complete, you know, are total studs. I mean, he lasts till the duration, of course, but, you know, as far as physical specimens and the big alpha guys, you know, it's the Vikings. So,
no, yeah. I mean, if they're like 70s Pittsburgh Steelers defensive line, then he's like the kicker.
Yes, definitely. Yeah.
And they treat him as such throughout the movie, which is very entertaining. You know, and he handles it well. You know, he kind of takes his lumps from them and dishes it back, and that's a lot of fun. A lot of that dialogue is good.
Yes.
Enjoyable. Manly, to be sure. So, you know, we'll take just a moment of to take a deep breath and sort
right.
of assess the level of testosterone that are
huge coursing through my veins.
Right, exactly. I'm
because it's just going to get worse with this
beard now. Yeah, yeah. So because we're moving, it's hard to imagine a movie more manly than the 13th.
That's
Ward.
Right. I mean, what's 2 and 1 going to be? Like once you're 3, you have to say what's 2 and 1 going to be,
right?
And what outpaces the 13th Warrior?
Right, exactly. And in terms of raw manliness, I think this next one at least matches, and it's a good contender for even topping the 13th Warrior in terms of just sheer machismo. And that is Zack Snyder's 300.
Yes, indeed.
Adaptation of his name is escaping me.
Frank Miller. Yep,
Frank Miller.
Yes.
His graphic novel, which I have not read. I don't, have you read it?
I did, I think. No, I just leafed through it. I didn't read it, yeah. I read Watchmen, the other comic book adaptation, so.
Yeah. Yeah, I have read the occasional Frank Miller piece, but not this one. This is definitely a movie that ticked off many people.
Oh, so many. I mean, I don't know who said this, and I don't have the correct quote, so you can dismiss this. But I remember a potential Prius-driving reviewer had said that it was like being subjected to like a 90-minute sexual assault or something like that. You know, I mean, I'm paraphrasing, and actually, to her credit, it was written a lot better. But it was not a fan, for sure.
No. And, yeah, I mean, my favorite – I reviewed the Blu-ray, the big tricked-out Blu-ray.
That's right. And I actually reviewed the entry level.
Right.
I reviewed the HD DVD actually.
Okay.
HD DVD.
Yeah. Right. So I think if you go to DVD Verdict and go to DVD reviews and then click on T and scroll down, you'll probably find, you know, 3 or 4 dozen reviews of 300, I imagine.
That's right.
The various DVDs and Blu-rays and HD DVDs and everything that have come out. But, I mean, my riff on it, since it had already been written about so much on the site, was that I just find it laughable that people complained about historical inaccuracy.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's very obvious. It's obvious that it's not designed to be a historically accurate epic, you know?
No, I mean, there's monsters and stuff and, you know.
The Spartans did not run around.
Is, you know.
Yeah,
the same. You know, the hobbits never existed.
Right.
The Lord of the Rings is ridiculous or something.
Yeah, I mean, the Spartans weren't running around in their underoos with capes and spears in their battles. Yeah. I mean, this is stuff that is just kind of inspired by, like, the heroic myths. I mean, obviously, the actual event, you know, the Battle of Thermopylae, you know, that's historic. But
Right.
You know, just the Frank Miller, Zack Snyder touches, obviously, those are inspired by, you know, just kind of the mythical stature of it all. You know, obviously, you know, Xerxes is not 9 feet tall, right?
No.
I don't think they had a fat executioner with saw blades on his forearms. They weren't fighting those giant elephants from Return of the King. You know, the immortals probably weren't demons. So, no. You know?
Probably not. But, you know, all of that stuff, it's an incredibly cathartic movie. At least it is for me. It's just a blast to watch. And, you know, one of the things, I think it's in the Blu-ray extras that they talk about this, but one of the places where the movie is pretty accurate, at least to the epic poetry, that is some of the basis of what we know about the Battle of Thermopylae, is all of their kind of wisecracking. That the Spartans really were known for kind of badass taunting.
Yeah, locker room talk, kind
right.
of.
Trash talking and, you know, that kind of stuff. And so a lot of that dialogue is, you know, comes right out of the poetry and stuff. And it is fiercely entertaining stuff. You know, the whole,
definitely.
What's his line about when they're going to be... Oh, then we'll fight in the shade.
That's right.
When they're talking about how
the arrows will blot out the sun.
Yeah, that their arrows will blot out the sun, and they'll fight in the shade. And all
well,
that.
I mean, didn't this movie piss off Ahmadinejad and those guys over in Iran, right?
I'm sure, but yeah, I mean, that's just...
I think that was documented, unless that's an urban legend.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's a reason to love it, as far as I'm concerned. But yeah, I would think that for a Prius owner, that would be another reason to hate it.
Yeah, just... And then... You know, obviously, just a great series of, you know, stylized, gory battle scenes. You know, just really, each one kind of outdoes the other. You know, it's just everything. I mean, a lot of people kind of knock it for slow motion. And yes, there's slow motion, but there's a good amount of, like, the opening, the first battle sequence is, you know, real time and, you know, feels pretty gritty. So it's not all this ballet of violence. So. It's a good mix. You know, there's orchestral score. There's like the pounding metal-ish score. So it's got a lot going on, and it ends in a way that makes you want to go out of the theater and lay siege to like a Radio Shack or something that's nearby.
Yeah, exactly.
You just want to lay siege to something.
Yeah, I mean, you just want to get into a group of guys and then run. Full throttle into another group of people.
That's right.
Let the slaughtering begin.
Yes.
I mean, it's fun throughout. The other thing is, it is a movie that completely says that politics is no way to solve any kind of problem at all. Politicians are not
right.
to be trusted. They're all a bunch of weasels.
That's right.
And you're better off just whipping ass.
And the scumbag, you know, like the scumbag turncoat is played by Dominic West there, you know. He's on the take anyway, so
right.
he's like this main appeaser, and then obviously Leonidas' wife gives that stirring speech that something out of John Bolton's memoirs, maybe, I don't know, you know, just this huge speech. So yeah, absolutely proactive, defend your country against overwhelming force, bravery, courage, you know, banding together. I mean, it is overflowing with that kind of. With that kind of message,
yeah. And I have to say, for all the movie's machismo and manliness, and it is an incredibly manly movie. Lena Headey is awesome.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely.
She is just completely badass throughout. You know, she's tough and really resilient in the beginning, and then, you know, to throw a little spoiler out there. Pretty much just guts Dominic West.
That's right. That's right.
When the time comes, and he definitely deserves it.
Absolutely.
And he's really great, man. He can really play a weasel well.
I think that was like his big.
Just makes it satisfying when he does get stabbed to death.
Definitely, that was one of his bigger roles after The Wire, too. So it was good to see him get that burn. He would show up later in a. It's not on this list, but it's a. It's a movie that would have made the extended director's cut of the list, perhaps, you know, maybe 16 or 17 or so, Centurion, which is kind of,
yes.
Yeah, this badass sword sword swinging affair. But just tons. I mean, unfortunately, Gerard Butler took this success and translated it into a series of awful romantic comedies with Katherine Heigl, unfortunately. So, you know, and Jennifer Aniston. So that was bad.
I had to review that one too. Jennifer Aniston. Yikes. Not the Bodyguard, right?
Yeah, he was working pretty hard to go through all that. Yeah, Goodwill. But there's a lot of
brutal.
Yeah, just so much. Probably one of my favorite sequences is when they go to the burned down village and they see all the villagers are kind of stapled to that tree. Remember the tree of the that one guy's like, these immortals. And then great line, Leonidas says, you know, we'll put their name to the test. Fantastic. Uh-huh. Yeah, fantastic. So
yeah, many great lines, much great killing, and
probably the least new
politicians.
Shockingly, yeah. That's right. A big kick to the groin on bureaucracy. So,
it's not a movie that advocates nuance.
They kick the diplomats down a well, you know, for crying out loud.
Right.
So. I think, that's pretty good, Dan. I mean, it is getting, my biceps are just bulging out of my sweatshirt right now. I mean, it is not a pretty sight here. It is very close to hulking out in the Johnson household, so you might need to curtail this. Yes.
Exactly. Yeah, we've, you know, kept it lean and tight, and as tight as a Spartan's abs, I guess. And so those are number 4 and 3, and we're in the home stretch. Next week will be 2 and 1, and that'll be the last one of the year. So I think we could pretend like we planned that out that way, and we're just brilliant. Nobody would believe it.
Yeah, if you listen to this show for any amount of time, planning something out, you know, is probably not. It's probably not one of our strong points, would you say? You know,
no. It is possible that the old white man cabal planned it out that way,
though. That's true. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, they are meticulous planners, if nothing else.
They are indeed. So yeah, well, I guess that's it.
Yeah, that's it. Anything else to say?
Man, well, Dan, thanks. 10 points easy.